Did you know you could support Nerd and Tie? That's right, for just $20, we would say your name here and maybe something nice about you. All you have to do is go to nerdandtie.com and click on the sponsorship information on the website. Or if you would like to contribute to our legal fund, you can go to GoFundMe.com/nerdandtie. It's not like I've been reading this message every episode for a long time. On this episode of Nerd and Tie, we mourn the passing of Ursula K. Le Guin. There's a coordinated campaign against Black Panther on Rotten Tomatoes by some angry, angry racist nerds. And American Gods has a new showrunners. Fantastic Beasts 2 won't show Dumbledore being gay. And Solo, a Star Wars story, is getting a new title in China. That plus your mailbag on a limited edition of Nerd and Tie. Oh. Welcome, folks, to Nerd and Tie, the only podcast on the internet with a dress code. I am one of your co-hosts, Trey Dorn. Joining me, as always, are the phenomenal Gen Proc.
Up.
And the wondiferous Nick Izumi.
Get out.
Now, we're going to start off the show, before we hit our stories, to mention something important that we all just decided and have been thinking about at Nerd Tie, and that is the format of this very show. We've been, since the beginning of the show, doing a very simple format of covering anywhere from 4 to 8 news stories, discussing all of them, each one by one, and then doing the mailbag at the end. This episode will follow that format, but this will be the last episode following that format. Starting next episode, the podcast is changing. It's still going to be us three. Still going to be the three of us nerds. And the episode's still going to start out with the top news, but we're only going to cover one or two stories, and then we're going to go into a discussion topic. And that's going to be the bulk of the episode, is we're going to do an in-depth discussion on a topic suiting that week. And, yeah, it's fine on the main. So we're going to do a discussion on that big topic, and then we will do the mailbag, of course. So it's going to be new territory, but don't worry, for those of you afraid of change, for this particular episode, we will still take you down the familiar route of magic, joy, and sadly, sorrow, as we do have to start out this episode with a negative story, sadly. It was reported on January 23rd that acclaimed science fiction and fantasy author Ursula K. Le Guin has passed away. The death was confirmed by her son, Theo Downs Le Guin, and he stated she'd been having health problems for the last several months. And he did not reveal the cause of death, but she was 88 years old. Ursula Le Guin.
Mega bummer, honestly.
Yeah, she's the author of the Earthsea series, also the author of The Left Hand of Darkness. And her influence on the literary world can't really be understated. And so it's 88 years is still a good life, but it's sad whenever a master of their craft passes on. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You look at her body of work and you have some really fascinating stories, not just with diverse cast, but some really just interesting, like, psychological studies of characters. And also, I hate to say it, but every time I think of her, I think of two things: her greatness as a storyteller and the fact that her Tales of Earthsea never got an adaptation that she liked.
Wasn't that a really bad Sci-Fi Channel movie?
There's a really bad Sci-Fi Channel movie that was offensively just terrible, and there was the animated one directed by Hayao Miyazaki's son that both Ursula Le Guin and Hayao Miyazaki said was garbage.
Ooh, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be rough being Hayao Miyazaki's son. Like.
Uh-huh. Don't feel great for Goro Miyazaki is what I'm saying.
I mean, he clearly made something bad, but, you know. My dad would be nicer to me. So, yay for, you know. No, there's no yay. There's, like, I don't know.
There's really no yay. This is just we lost another great writer.
That is a verbal tick. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's the sarcastic so yay during a negative story is it is a thing that I do subconsciously. Woof. Yeah, no.
Very.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, this is... She was a legend in the science fiction and fantasy world, and, you know, her influence can't be understated, and, yeah, that's... It's just sad.
I hope she's in a better place now. That's about all I've got.
You know what's not a better place, though, Nick?
The internet?
The internet!
Oh, boy. So, let's just stay in Sadness Town. What the heck? So, a coordinated group of internet denizens claiming to be fans of DC Comics, upset with the fact that critics have used the website Rotten Tomatoes to say bad things about Justice League and other DC Cinematic Universe, or excuse me, DC Extended Universe movies, have decided that they are going to band together to make really low, bad audience scores for the Black Panther movie, which is not opened yet. I bring up that it has not opened yet because some of them have already started putting the bad scores on the page.
Can I point out that, like, you know, this whole, like, the DC Marvel thing reads so disingenuous when you consider that Wonder Woman had, like, a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
Like, well, DC movies are more than capable of getting really good critic scores on Rotten Tomatoes. Justice League was just not a good movie.
Well, it's funny because it seems like these are the same people who were attacking The Last Jedi not that long ago. And it's funny, I think, that these same group of guys always seem to go after movies about women and minorities.
Really?
But I'm sure that's got to be a coincidence,
That's got to
right?
be a coincidence, Nick. I can't see. Are you saying that there are people who are racist and sexist and probably, you know, transphobic and homophobic while we're at it out there who are disingenuous in what they say and claim that they're doing their actions for other reasons?
I would never imply
My
such a thing.
God! Den, have you ever heard of such an outrageous thing before?
Den's just like, nope.
No, it's so, I'm just... Oh, wow.
I just wanted to address that one because this is just driving me nuts.
Oh my god, I can't.
Sick of
like
these
this
people.
Is this is insane. Like, I don't know. These are the same guys who like they do this. Well, first off, I want to like ask why they even think that the Rotten Tomato audience score means shit, because time and time again we have shown that it means nothing because of people like this. It's The audience score used to mean something to a degree, like, but they've completely borked it. They've made it useless. Like, look at The Last Jedi's, like, I don't remember what The Last Jedi's audience score was, but I know it was pretty low for a while because of these people.
It was low for a while because of these coordinated efforts by these same dudes. It's...
But The Last Jedi was, you know, a good movie. Like, okay, so I understand there's a lot of controversy about The Last Jedi. Like, there are people who really don't like it, mostly because they don't understand what a good movie is.
I hate to be that guy who says everyone else is wrong. Just this once, I'm going to be that guy, because frankly, 98% of the complaints that I hear about that movie are not legitimate complaints.
There's a
by any stretch of the imagination. And there are legitimate things to complain about in Star Wars The Last Jedi. It is not a perfect movie, but
there are things that were done on purpose that, like, if someone describes it accurately as what happened in the film, like, even as long as, you know, they might not like it, even if it's there for a reason. You know what I mean? It's like Rian Johnson made a choice to literally make, like, part of the whole point of the thing was failure. And so people see certain parts of the movie as unnecessary because it didn't do anything, except the important part of that story was it not working. Like, so...
Exactly.
Like, well, and if they don't like that as part of the narrative, like, they, like, as long as they understand that it was on purpose, and then they say, yeah, but I still feel like that as part of the narrative didn't work, like, that I like, I respect that kind of complaint.
I can respect that,
claim there are plot holes that don't exist. The fact is that, like, I've heard people complain about with The Last Jedi, and I think, you know, it's been out long enough where this is not a minor spoiler. I can say it without spoiling. So there's a certain thing that Luke does in the last part of the film, which people say, oh, that's an unprecedented force power, and that's never been done before, except for the fact that it came straight out of the old EU.
Also, more pressingly, as far as I'm concerned, it's magic!
Well, right.
I'm sorry, it's magic!
But people claim that, oh, but it's magic, but they have a system that they used to work, except for the fact that this pre-existed within the attic system that you're talking about.
Also,
I'm
also going to just throw this one out there. If people, if you are among the people who are like, oh, the everything about the ending of the movie didn't work and was dumb and no one with any talent would write that, you might want to go back and say that to the faces of, well, unfortunately everyone I'm going to list is dead, but why don't you travel back in time, say that to the face of Geoffrey of Monmouth, Thomas Mallory, and T.H. White, because guess what? It's the same ending as King Arthur. Literally.
Yeah.
Literally, you idiots.
Well, okay, so do you know what the audience score? Do you know what the audience score is on Rotten Tomatoes for The Last Jedi right now? It is 48. It's 48%. 48%. It's like in the 90s, certified fresh from critics, but it's 48% from the audience. But here's the thing: if it was really not that good a movie for audiences, I don't think it would have crossed a billion at the box office.
Yeah, audiences apparently just...
It is...
There are very loud, vocal people who didn't like it, but, like, the average person you talk to...
It is the second highest grossing Star Wars movie. The only one ahead of it is The Force Awakens. And that one went huge because we hadn't had a Star Wars movie for a really long time. And so, like, some of us went out and saw it a ton. Because, you know...
And I'm sorry, I'll admit, I'm a little biased on this one. Honestly, this is among my favorites now. I've been really lucky with Disney recently. Like, I enjoyed Force Awakens, but I wouldn't have put it above anything in the original trilogy, or, well, at least the first two films of the original trilogy. But this movie did everything I wanted. The Last Jedi was the King Arthur movie I wanted last year.
Yeah, it's,
I'm putting it that way.
So I know I'm on the record a lot with The Last Jedi saying I don't know how much I'm going to like it long term and that I liked it, but I went out and saw it again since I made those statements. And I liked it even more the second time, mostly because, like, the first time there were lots of moments where I had to deal with the fact that it wasn't the movie I expected. And I had to put that out of my mind. The second time, it was the movie I expected, and so I got to... and like I said, I even liked it the first time when it was going against my expectation. Like, I liked it that first time. I liked it even more the second time, and I think it's going to hold up even better. And we have to remember that audiences didn't like Empire Strikes Back when it first came out, and that's considered to be, like, the best Star Wars movie by most people. Like, that's the good one. Like, you talk to geeks over the past, like, how many decades, and they'll all say, oh, that's the best one. So, you know.
Yeah.
Are you there, Nick? Oh, there we are, Nick. Nick moved.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was out for a little bit for a second. I don't know. My rage overpowered the internet.
All right. Well, you came back right at the end there. So,
well, anyway, off of Star Wars, I just want to go back to Black Panther again, just real quick.
Yeah.
Because I really do think, I don't think it's unfair to say that the reason why these guys are getting upset is because it's a movie with an almost entirely black cast. Because the thing is, these same guys, before they were doing these coordinated Rotten Tomatoes things, some of them were even upset with Wonder Woman because its success would mean that Zack Snyder ultra manly man version of the DCEU was going to go away.
Yeah.
And, quite frankly, I'm glad it's gone and it belongs in the same pine box with Jason Todd.
Jason Todd is best when dead. That's the whole thing is it's like, that's why I'm also like, these campaigns are useless. They're meaningless because the only people who pay attention to the Rotten Tomatoes audience scores are the people running these campaigns. No one cares. Like, no one cares that The Last Jedi has like made a couple of headlines at one point, but then the headlines are followed up by 1.3 billion or 1.2 billion, whatever it's at. And it's like, nobody cares what the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes was, ever. No one gives a crap. They care about the critic score, and they care about because movie studios will promote based on the critic score if it's really good. And that critic score, it doesn't really say what people think it does, because a film that, like, someone says, hey, I kind of liked it, there are huge problems, that's a positive review on Rotten Tomatoes. And the guy who said, or parts I really liked, but overall it wasn't quite strong enough, that's a negative. Like, it's all ones and zeros in that score. So a film that's just sort of okay, but everyone agrees that it's just sort of okay, is going to score higher than the movie that people intensely loved, but a quarter of people didn't. But, you know.
So it's silly. These people are prejudiced jerks. And yeah.
Yeah. It's dumb. And
it's not going to hurt Star Wars, and it better not hurt Black Panther.
Because you know what?
I can't wait for that movie.
What all the stories are about Black Panther? How much the critics love it, about how so far it's the most well-received Marvel film by critics. Period.
It's sounding like Michael B. Jordan is playing a good villain.
Yeah.
And honestly, I still haven't seen Thor. I'm sorry about that. I need to see Thor 3. Other than Michael Keaton and Tom Hiddleston, it hasn't been a great world for villains. So I can't wait to see Michael B. Jordan. I bet he's going to be awesome because he's awesome in everything.
Kate Blanchett's pretty good in Thor.
I bet she's good. She's pretty good in everything too. Come to think of it,
I mean, you need to go see Thor 3.
I know. I haven't had a chance. It's not playing anywhere near me anymore.
Yeah, it's because the Blu-ray's coming out.
Yeah, well, I'll pick it up.
Do it.
I'll check out when it's coming out. I'll just grab it from Best Buy or something. I don't know. It looks. I really want to see it. I'm angry I didn't get to see it.
Do
but
it.
Life came at me fast. Quiet, Palpatine.
Do it. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's why I'm like, this whole campaign is useless because it's a bunch of racists complaining and trying to rig a number only they pay attention to. This is the definition of the internet shouting into a box.
Not even a cardboard box. Is there something slightly happier, maybe? Maybe? On the horizon?
Gan, what you got for us?
Oh, no. Did we lose Gan?
Do we have a Gen-lay? Oh no, folks, this is happening before the show. Gen's fault. Folks, Gen is not asleep. Gen just has a massive delay from things coming from her end to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find out what happens. And we are back. Folks at home, you may have noticed, I don't know what you noticed, but what you just heard before was recorded several days before this bit because Skype decided to no longer allow Gen to connect with me and Nick. Nick and I. Nick and me.
Thanks, Skype.
Thanks, Skype.
And because of that, it's easy to join audio files, and I'm too lazy to join video files, so we're just going to do an audio-only episode. And if I referred to anything being visible on screen for video viewers, I guess that's just unimportant. So anyways, on to our next story again.
Yeah. So last May, Starz announced that it had renewed American Gods for a second season, except the showrunners, Michael Green and Brian Fuller, decided to leave the show.
After
a bit of a search, the network has now found their new replacement to showrun the show. And it's going to be Jesse Alexander, who has worked on several other projects, such as Star Trek Discovery and Hannibal.
With Brian Fuller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So someone who has some Brian Fuller experience, so to speak.
Yes.
Right. Because and Hannibal's a show that Brian Fuller didn't even leave. So I guess like I have some like I don't know like I have so Discovery turned out fine, and Brian Fuller left that show, so maybe there's a chance. I know that it's reported that Jesse Alexander is going to work closely with Neil Gaiman on making sure that the tone is right for the second season. So I mean, obviously they're trying to do something. You know, not terrible, but, you know, it's still, you know, there are many shows that I've watched over the years where that have survived showrunner changes and been fine, or at least no worse. But the problem is Brian Fuller has such a unique voice. Like, he has such a unique voice that it's always obvious to tell when he's exited something. You know what I mean?
Sorry, I didn't have anything else to say that.
As a spark of hope, it's been reported that Neil Gaiman said that Alexander loves and understands both the book and the TV series.
That's a good endorsement. Yeah, that's a... I have not watched the show yet because I am only on chapter 3 of the book right now.
And that's fine. That's a good reason.
It's a good book. I just want to finish it first.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... like... So I mean, here's the thing. Like, you know, you can tell the difference between. So, like, I was talking about Brian Fuller's voice. You compare the series Dead Like Me, where he left during the first season of Dead Like Me, and you compare that to something like Pushing Daisies or Wonderfalls, or you know, it's. I'm just going to stick to those two because they're very similar genre. Versus, you know, Hannibal's very different than those other series. Also, I haven't watched Hannibal, and I've watched those other series. because Hannibal is full of murder, and I just, like, I just want to relax and not watch murder. Like, you can tell, like, the Dead Like Me changes after Fuller's departure. Like, not necessarily, and like, I still love the entirety of Dead Like Me. I'm not going to, like, crap on the show, because I thoroughly enjoyed Dead Like Me, but it's definitely there's just a very subtle tonal shift, and so where it stops, where it just, it continues to be a decent show, but it stops feeling like a Brian Fuller show, and so that's why I get a little concerned about his departure. Now, it is someone who's worked with him, and so that's like a good thing, but you know, it's, the problem is, like, we never saw what Discovery was going to be if he had been actually running the show once it went to production.
And like, I really wish we could have. I mean, not just, I still like what we got, but
I'm a big fan of Star Trek Discovery. I have criticisms, but mostly my criticisms are all about continuity involving the Klingons. And so, like, that's, but, like, as a show, like, the storytelling I really enjoy and things like that. So, like, I like Discovery. I'm not crapping on Discovery. But we never saw what Brian Fuller's unrealized version of the show would have been. So it's, we know what Brian Fuller's, you know, vision for American Gods was. We got that for a season. And while, you know, this is a person who's worked with Brian Fuller and knows how to do something in similar tone, it'll never be, no matter what happens, the same show that we would have gotten under him. And so I hope the show is good, but I think my best hopes is that we get 90% of the show that we got the first season versus getting, you know,
That's fair.
Yeah. Like, if Fuller hadn't left, the show could have been more than the first season, but I feel with Fuller's departure, I feel like no matter what, it's always going to be slightly where it happened with, you know, a different showrunner with Aaron Sorkin with The West Wing. Like, the first four seasons of The West Wing, I argue, are some of the best television ever made. And I will tell you,
I agree.
Seasons 5, 6, and 7, after he leaves after season 4, seasons 5, 6, and 7 are very good television, and I argue that the years they aired, they were the best it was the best show on television, on network television, when seasons 5, 6, and 7 were airing. But it is also true that season 5 especially is nowhere near the quality of season 4. Season 5 was where, you know, John Wells took over and they had to, you know, continue without Sorkin and Tommy Schlamme. And season 5 is really, really subpar compared to the rest
quite
of the
season
show.
Quite season 5-y is what I think you're getting at.
But but it was still, like, the show was still really good. So it's, you know, it continued on for 7 more years. And by the end of the run, it was a different show, but it was good. But the point is that, like, that voice leaving, that showrunner departing, like, I'm hoping for Dead Like Me season 1's and, like, you know, Dead Like Me and not West Wing season 5.
I think that's how it is with any show, though. Like, you lose a showrunner and things are gonna change.
You ever watch Falling Skies on TNT that ran for a few years with Noah Wiley? And
I did not.
I did. I did. It changed showrunners every half season, pretty much. And it changed showrunners every season completely. And that's why entire plot points, like, would just totally get abandoned and reset, and the tone massively changed every season.
That's why the last three episodes of Gundam the 8th MS Team are drastically different from the first two-thirds of the show, was that the showrunner died. It started out as a very, like, semi-realistic take on Mobile Suit Warfare, and then the last three episodes got really super idealistic and pacifist, and it didn't really mesh in terms of tone.
You know,
so I mean, I've seen it happen. I'm hoping that, I hope American Gods doesn't have that happen. It's a good show. Or, I mean, it's probably a good show. People tell me it's a good show. It's a good book.
I've seen it. I've seen it. It's excellent.
Quite good.
I've seen it. It's excellent. Thanks to that Free Stars preview weekend where I watched the entirety of the show.
Huzzah!
They gave me the network free for 2 days and access to On Demand. My wife and I watched the entirety of the season.
Don't blame you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, you know, he's a unique creative voice, but, you know, with him, you know where the creative voice of a franchise hasn't left and is still in full control? The Harry Potter world.
Oh boy, and is that creative voice still in full control and not always making everybody happy? So, as many of you know, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the film series is continuing to chug forward with good old J.K. Rowling, the creator of the Harry Potter series, still writing the scripts for these movies, and or at the very least, you know, doing these screenplays and the basic story outlines. And after, you know, spending a couple months deflecting the idea that she's fine with having an alleged abuser like Johnny Depp involved with the movies, Rowling has found herself in more hot water after confirming that while young Dumbledore will indeed be in the sequel, his sexuality will not come into play in the story whatsoever. And people are upset about this with good reason. I'm sorry, with good reason. This is, I remember all of us probably remember a few years back when Rowling dropped the bombshell of, oh, Dumbledore is gay.
That was almost a decade ago.
Uh-huh. I get, wow, that was a while ago. But I mean, like, it was this big deal when she announced it, and they did nothing with it. I mean, this is just, it's, this
suddenly my work is more inclusive.
Yeah, it's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is inclusive after the fact, but yeah. I'm not going to actually explore it.
Yeah, I'm going to take credit for having a gay character that's never mentioned once in the books or films. And you know what? You can get away with that when everything's already done when you announce it. But then when you go back into the lore, it's like, and you don't deal with the thing you promised, like, it's really kind of like, it almost feels like a betrayal. Like,
almost?
That you've, well...
frankly, almost?
Well, I say almost because technically I always believe that no author or creator actually owes anybody anything for the content of their creation.
Okay, that's fair.
So that's why that's I say fair. Almost. But I do feel like she has, in many ways, like, there's this desire to almost, you know, like, to get the points with the LGBTQ community and then not actually follow through feels disingenuous. Like, it's such bullshit, man. Like,
yeah, it really is.
To
it's
tease
upsetting.
Representation and never deliver, but then to continue to tease it is disingenuous. It is, and it's bullshit. Like,
and really, let's. I mean, I really hate this argument that I hear from some people of why does the character's sexuality affect the story one way or another? How many movies have I seen where, you know, the straight couple stop the plot dead in its tracks so that we can be reminded of how straight and romantic they are?
How many action films that have nothing to do with romance?
I can think of so many off the top of my head.
Sun's going down, big guy.
What?
Sun's going down, big guy.
Hello. Yeah, stop everything and let's stick a smooch in there.
Remember Man of Steel? That movie that didn't even have anything interesting for Lois Lane to do, but we better have those makeout scenes. Those are important.
Yeah. I feel like out of all the things to complain about Man of Steel, though, that's like low on the list.
I know, but I was just thinking of it. It was one of the first movies that came to mind, though, because that is a movie that, like, it stops its plot completely cold to do, I mean, so, but yeah, there's tons of movies where they do that. The plot just stops cold so that there's time for the heteros to kiss. I just,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fucking bullshit, J.K. Rowling. This isn't going on YouTube. I don't care about monetization. We weren't going to be able to monetize that. Even if I put this up on YouTube as an audio file, I'm not going to be able to monetize after a couple of weeks, so...
But seriously, J.K. Rowling, what the heck? Like, really? Really? Yeah. Like, what is the... What was even the point of that other than... getting brownie points after the fact, and two, trying to stay relevant after you finish your books.
Yeah.
So this is, okay, so this is where I think this is what's happening here. So J.K. Rowling really wanted the points, and I even believe that she really wants Dumbledore to be gay. But she's also pretty much, from the beginning, always been interested in getting the largest commercial audience and release she can. And the fact
right.
is that she's, I believe that the studio, I don't know if it's the studio or if it's the director or if it's her, but someone along the line is afraid of offending the right-wing scary people, in quotes, and is afraid of offending them too much. Mind you, it's already a goddamn movie about witchcraft and wizards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But what? I'm like, the only people left in this country who are freaked out about the gays are those people. So I'm just saying, like, nobody, the only people who would care are the people who aren't going to go see a Harry Potter universe movie anyways. And so, like, it's just a dumb thing to do. Like, the fact is that they've made such a big deal about Dumbledore being gay over the past decade that I'm pretty sure everybody who likes Harry Potter knows. And so, if you have Jude Law make out with Johnny Depp, first off, I kind of want to watch that happen, even though Johnny Depp is a garbage monster.
Isn't Johnny Depp playing his evil brother, though? So that
I think he was his brother. I thought, what?
Or I don't remember.
I thought that it was implied that he was a former romantic interest of Dumbledore. I didn't watch Fantastic. Who's Johnny Depp playing? I didn't watch Fantastic Beasts, so I actually don't know.
Fantastic Beasts was an okay movie with really bad editing where you can tell where that it was supposed to be a lot longer and then they cut it.
Yeah, he's playing Grindel, whatever. He's playing Grindelwald. Grindelwald is not his brother.
I don't know. I'm having a...
It was... Day. Okay, so... the Grindelwald thing is...
Oh, God,
because
that's right.
J.K.
Ezra Miller
literally
was in that movie.
Said, like, implied that Dumbledore fell in love with Grindelwald.
Okay, yeah.
And that's why, like, literally, like...
Hmm.
He's the guy that Dumbledore is supposed to have canonically been in love with.
Yeah, well, I guess we can't trust people to handle that.
I mean, you know, it's
everyone.
Here's the thing, like, that's why people like the Johnny Depp casting. I'm like, I hate Johnny Depp. I don't want to give Johnny Depp money. He is playing the bad guy. He's still a garbage monster. I figure I saw the last Pirates movie.
But
here's the thing. I know that Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp was in the movie because I didn't pay attention. I just went to go see it.
I saw the Pirates movie because I want to keep going to see Pirates movies because if they keep making Pirates movies, Johnny Depp keep having to be in them. And Johnny Depp apparently really doesn't like still being in them. And so I figure it's punishment for Johnny Depp to keep having to play Jack Sparrow.
Sure. Sure, we'll go with that.
That's my justification. But that movie did terribly anyways. They're not going to make another. I don't know. Like, I'm annoyed with J.K. Rowling.
I'm pretty angry, honestly. I think this is just a load of hot sack of crap.
It's a load of bull hockey. But, Johnny Depp is a big, you know, it's, you know, Johnny Depp's casting, of course, though, is because he's big and marketable internationally.
You know, right. And, of course.
You know, speaking of films internationally, as I awkwardly transition to our next story.
It's better than most of our transitions. So
honestly,
you know,
yeah.
at the beginning of this episode, the Solo A Star Wars Story teaser commercial came out, and since then we've gotten the trailer. I know at the beginning of this episode we're talking about recording before the trailer came out, but now we're this part of the episode we're recording after the trailer's out, and it's a decent. I no longer dread the film because of
I was about to say I don't dread it anymore. I'm still not super like gonna lose my mind over it, but
yeah.
You know, I'm actually, you know, I'll go see it with my dad. It'll be fun.
My new response is I'm not gonna hate this. Anyways, we of course that trailer was stamped with the title Solo, A Star Wars Story. Well, in the international release of this movie, you know, coming out later this year, in China, it is not going to be called Solo, A Star Wars Story. Instead, it's getting the amazing name that I wish it got everywhere of Ranger Solo.
Ranger Solo.
I will tell you exactly why this is happening. And it is because...
I want that to be my new name.
And it is because they are purposely removing Star Wars from the name of this movie because China does not care about Star Wars. And it would probably hurt the movie to have Star Wars in the name. So The Last Jedi did kind of terribly in China, but I don't want to like when this first happened, I think it only did like 40 million or 50 million somewhere in there, The Last Jedi, and it was really performed around, and like people talked about, oh, is The Last Jedi failing, and it was like, no, they purposely released it small because they expected to make no money in China.
Because China historically does not have an interest in the Star Wars movies.
Well, because they didn't grow up with them, they didn't get the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm. So, they didn't get, they didn't get them till recently. So,
yeah.
Like, the nostalgia polls in Force Awakens did nothing for China.
Yeah, the Force Awakens didn't do well. The Rogue One did not do well. And so, well, the funny thing is, my favorite headline was, because there are all these headlines about, is Star Wars doing badly? Is The Last Jedi failing in box offices because of the Chinese performance? And I believe it was a Forbes article that had a headline something like, is The Last Jedi failing, only having brought in over $1 billion worldwide? Like, the author was sarcastically mocking the other headlines because it was like, no, Disney and Lucasfilm knew exactly how this was going to do in China. They did two movies before this. Like, it made all... They don't care about the China. You know, people make a big deal about the Chinese market because it does affect films that don't do so well here. Like the Fast and Furious movies and the Transformers movies are totally kept afloat because they do really well in China. You know,
it's the only reason Pacific Rim or Warcraft made their money back.
Yeah.
One of those was good.
Pacific Rim made a profit enough to justify a sequel because how well it did in China. So it's not always bad movies that do well in China. It's sometimes good movies that do well in China. But they know the game. They know that, you know, that China doesn't care about Star Wars, and you know, like that's how the universe works. So that's why I love this title, Ranger Solo. I think it would be amazing if the Solo movie became huge in China. I would love that so much. If
that'd be so good.
If the first Star Wars film to do well over there would be, I want to see a generation later where some kids get really into the original trilogy because they grew up on Solo, on Ranger Solo. Like, I want more of this Han Solo character. Oh, you
God,
mean he's in four more movies? I'll go watch those four more movies and watch him die. Ranger Solo. Like, I actually think this is genius. I think this is Disney Lucasfilm's best shot of getting Star Wars to take off in China is Ranger
Solo. I just
Solo.
Think it'd be hilarious if it backfired and there's just into China, there's like this demand only for Ranger Solo movies. The other characters.
Just re-edit the original trilogy. just retitle a New Hope Ranger Solo 2. And Ranger Solo 3.
All these Chinese cinema files are gonna like be going to these movies being like, it's like Mad Max. So the first one is about him, but the others he's wandering in other people's adventure.
Yes! Yes!
Oh my gosh, I love this.
People grow up going like, oh, you see the five Ranger solo films? Yeah, it's really weird that they recast them in the second. That is totally what... Okay, so in the dream world where Ranger Solo takes off in China, this sort of reality could only happen if these movies came out, like, pre-internet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then that would happen.
Yeah.
You know, the Chinese may have restrictions on the internet, but they have IMDb.
Yeah, yeah. I like imagining that alternate world.
I know. Well, and so here's hoping Ranger Solo takes off.
Here's to you, Ranger Solo. I finally have a reason to cheer for this movie.
You know, here's the thing. If they release an official Ranger Solo t-shirt, I need to own it. I need to get if the movie poster with the Ranger Solo title ever becomes available, I need that on my wall, like in a frame. Like, I won't have any other Star Wars posters, just Ranger Solo.
Ranger Solo.
Ranger Solo. I feel like that, like, the Millennium Falcon should turn into a giant robot in the movie Ranger Solo.
It might. Be patient.
And Chewbacca should be recast as a woman.
What?
I don't know.
Actually, it's funny you'd mention the turning into a robot, because Hasbro is redoing those Star Wars Transformers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They've got the Millennium Falcon that turns into one half turns into a Han Solo, a Ranger Solo, and the other turns into Chewbacca. So, you know.
Those toys are so weird because they weren't like made by the regular Transformers people.
Mm-hmm. They were just really, really weird toys.
Oh,
boy. Ranger Solo.
It's a wild world, man. It's a wild world. It's Ranger Solo's world.
Pray he's out there.
One day, Ranger Solo. One day. Only Ranger Solo can stop the Empire. I'm just saying. Like, if you look at this like Mad Max, he does kind of like heroically save the day at the end of A New Hope also.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now I want there to be like some sort of like Lone Ranger, Ranger Solo thing.
No, because then we'd have to bring back Johnny Depp.
No one saw that movie. No one saw
that. How'd
it
do in China?
I don't know. I don't want to know.
I don't know.
Nick, I have a confession to make.
What's your confession, Dad?
I saw that movie.
You saw that movie?
The Lone Ranger
the
movie, the Army Hammer? Oh, man.
I forget what Amy and I were watching. Because
even I didn't see that movie.
Well, it was the other movie we went for.
What was the other movie?
I forget. I have to ask her.
You don't even remember what the good movie was, but you remember The Lone Ranger?
Yeah, because it was so bad it made me feel sick. I was gonna like puke during that movie. It made me feel like motion sick and just like, oh, it was so bad.
I am so looking forward to this when we do the format change and we just have like entire episodes of learning interesting things about each other.
I'm really excited. I'm almost as that's like the only thing I'm more excited for than Rangers.
Man.
Rangers Solo.
Oh boy. Well, Ken, why don't you take us into the mailbag?
Yeah. Let me look in this mailbag. Oh look, a letter from Keith Shizuo.
Subject.
It's about YouTube.
Okay.
So I'll read it out for you.
Again?
You're Cylon-ing a little bit.
You are Cylon-ing a little bit, Gen. So, with that in mind, why don't I read the letter? Skype's our friend, everybody. We made it 30 minutes into the episode this time.
Curse you, Skype.
All right. Well, I'll read the letter while Gen sits as a frozen frame in the corner of my screen. From Keith Shizuo, subject YouTube money.
Oh boy.
Hi, neckbeards and neck covers. I've been thinking about
I've been thinking about the information situation. What? Dang it. Skype, nothing's wrong. Nothing again.
Hey, Gen, are you in real time yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, you sound like you're in real time.
Am I?
Yeah.
Did
you're
I
back.
Get kicked back?
You're back.
Oh, I'm back to the past to play games and kick ass.
All right. All right, so why don't you try reading that letter again?
Yeah, let me find it. We've had many messages since it. Hi, neckbeards and neck covers.
Yay!
I've been thinking about the YouTube demonetization situation. I both agree with you and I disagree with you. Basically, I think demonetizing small businesses are evil and have a low tackle. Served where they can be actually used rather than just having YouTube taking their cut. Am I doing weird things again? Or
so what's funny is what happens is that so for folks at home that have heard this, what happens is that when you go slow is that what happens is the stuff that you send then starts fast forwarding.
Oh no.
When you catch up. So why don't I read the letter?
Yeah.
And then you can respond if you have responses. All right. Hi, neckbeards and neckbeards. I've been thinking about YouTube demonetization situation a lot recently and thought I'd throw my two cents in. I both agree and disagree with you. Basically, I think demonetizing small accounts is a necessary evil that should have happened a long time ago. For every 10,000 accounts gathering 50 cents a month who will take years to even meet the threshold for their first check, there's a professional YouTuber with a mortgage trying to live down the adpocalypses. Why have all this money lying in limbo when the ads could be served where they can actually be used rather than just having YouTube taking their cut? I'm going to respond to that part. That's not how ads work. So the ads viewed on channel A are not taking money away from ads from channel B. Because channel B is getting paid per view on their own channel. It's not like there's just one pool that goes everywhere. It's not like fewer ads being shown on YouTube are going to net result more money for the people who have ads on their channel. That's not how it works. But I'll get back to that. YouTube isn't profitable for Google and is and a big YouTuber going under or downsizing is potentially thousands of dollars down the drain, while another $1,000 worth of ads could have been served to them, but until now have been split between another 1,000 hobbyists, a category in which I include myself. That said, there are two major things I disagree with. The removal of features from smaller accounts, e.g. linking to outside sites, etc., and YouTube Red demonetizations. Videos have been demonetized left and right for things like sexual content and violence, but one thing that no one seems to be talking about is the fact that they are not only losing ads, but also YouTube Red subscription money when YouTube Red itself is producing shows like Ryan Hansen Solves Crimes on Television, in which the very first frame of the trailer describes strong language, comedic violence, and adult situations. Three major red flags on YouTube at the moment. Remember, YouTube Red money isn't given to them by big companies, but by regular users, and I find it extremely hypocritical for them to claim they've been demonetizing videos completely to appease advertisers, and they themselves appear to support such content and hold back YouTube Red revenue arbitrarily. Anyway, sorry for the long email. Keep spocking and whatnot. Okay, a couple things. First off, YouTube Red content can be whatever it wants because ads aren't served on YouTube Red shows, so they don't have to appease sponsors on that. Secondly, YouTube did change the way they demonetize, where if it's demonetized for questionable content, accounts were still receiving the partner accounts with a demonetized video would still get YouTube Red money for those videos. It's so really what I think it's weird to bring up the YouTube Red show because, again, those are shows not reliant on advertiser money. And really, this entire purge of partner channels is about the whole point is that they don't want the videos accidentally being served alongside hate speech. And it's catching all these small creators in its wake because what's happening is that they're upping the thresholds for what allows you to monetize, and so they figure an established channel, they've been able to review more content than a non-established channel that could post something immediately. Really, I don't mind losing the ads on most of my videos. Don't really care. Mm-hmm. The only thing that sucks is that what happens is that if a small channel suddenly has a video go viral and blow up, a non-partner, someone that hadn't been a partner, someone that was a partner before but loses their partner status, if they have one video go viral and suddenly get, like, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of views or whatever, and that has happened. I have seen accounts that has happened. That means they can't monetize that video that suddenly went huge. So what it means is that, like, they can't take advantage of anything that ever goes big. And I know that it's like, it's easy to say that, you know, 99.9% of these channels are never going to have that happen. And that's true. But for the one guy it does happen to, it is money out of that guy's pocket. And I think in many ways, most small creators are secretly hoping that they're going to be that guy one day. And, you know, That's where it's rough. And again, I think it's the minute I think the 1,000 subscriber limit is fine, and I think that having some sort of threshold on viewership is okay. I think that the number of minutes per year is especially hurtful for channels that don't update a lot or do animation and short form video.
And yeah, it's
because a 15-second ad or 30-second ad on a 3-minute video is the same advertising dollars as a 15 or 30 second ad on a 20 minute video, but it's hugely different in view time.
Spoilers. There's a reason I don't do animation nearly as much anymore. I'm a bad example because I've just been, maybe I'm a good example. Due to like my life exploding around me in those last few months, I haven't even been able to make uploads as often. And it's just been,
it's full of rocks and things, you know. That's the lyric.
Yeah. Right? Well, like the thing is, and now knowing that I'm losing my partner status, really, just I don't know. It makes my motivation to get back on it. Just it hinders my motivation. I'll admit that.
Nick Izumi, like, stole the sun. All you
I didn't.
I'm not even
better run.
I didn't steal the sun yet.
I'm not even, like, a content creator on YouTube, but the one tiny little issue I got with your letter is you comparing these small accounts with these quote-unquote professional YouTubers. How do you expect people to become a professional YouTuber if they don't start with a small account?
Mm-hmm.
If all the small accounts get killed off and there's only the big ones, like, you're not going to get any new big accounts ever.
Well, these accounts can reapply for partner status if they do start to build an audience. I think the losing features is what bothers me. Like, again, I could handle
losing features is scary, though. I mean,
yeah.
Yeesh.
Well, the good news is it looks like a lot of the features I always relied on, it looks like everybody gets a lot of those now. So it's like there are a lot of features that the whole reason I have a partner channel is because there were features I wanted that were only available to partner channels originally. Like live streaming or it used to be, you know, having videos longer than 15 minutes. I don't know what's, you know, like I remember back in the day, you couldn't upload a video to YouTube longer than 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, especially for long form video essays. You just had to do part one, part two. Yeah.
Like it's a different world now, but like.
It's still, I don't know. I think it's a slap in the face.
It feels an insult, yeah. Especially for it would be one thing to reduce the admission of new partner channels, but it's the booting existing partner channels. That's what gets me, because that's where it feels like an insult. Because you had the thing, you had a status, and you're taking that away.
Well, and it's already been hard enough to keep up with things because, like, I know I complained about it before, so I don't want to do it too much, but there was a time when I got way more hits before the algorithm got adjusted, and that's... So it's like I already got set up to fail, and then I also lose my partner status in a system that I couldn't win in.
The system used to give me more minute views, and then it took those away... And then it penalized me for not having those anymore.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Nick, why don't you read Random Ramblings Man? You sent us two things. We're only going to read one of them this episode, and we're going to save the other one for next episode.
For next episode, oh yeah. Now that's more like it is the subject of this one. And now on to my first
Nope. What? First mailbag of 2018, not exactly, is the one we're supposed to read.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
First.
God, I really need to get back. This one doesn't have a subject. Or not exactly. Anyway. God, I really need to get back into the swing of things. Hey, nerds with ties. A belated Happy New Year to you and everyone else at Nerd and Tie. As it was for you, 2017 was a year where the world seemed to be nothing more than constantly raging dumpster fire. We made it through to live another day and keep the assholes of everyday life from burying us. Here. Here's to continuing the stand in 2018 with as much determination as we mustered in 2017. Now, since this is coming so late after your best and worst of 2017, I won't offer my 2 cents on every category and instead focus on what I'm good at, movies. I saw more good than bad last year, mostly out of necessity for my state of mind. But there were some pretty impressive stinkers I laid eyes on. It's worth noting that I had a greater variety of movie watching partners this year than previous years, which either improved the quality or the experience or made the stinkers tolerable. As to Random's best and worst films of 2017, I had trouble deciding on one film to place above the rest for good, so I'll decide to cheat and name 3 movies that left an impression or lack thereof for me. For best of 2017, there were 3 films that earned my highest possible verdict of S grade: Get Out, Blade Runner 2049, and Shape of Water.
I saw one of those.
I didn't see any of those.
Oh, Get Out is so good.
I want to see it. I want to see Shape of Water. I want to see Blade Runner. I just couldn't.
I think I watched Get Out on Netflix.
I
I didn't get to see it in the theaters. It was when I watched it.
Weird. I'll have to look. Anyway, for the worst of 2017, these three earned grades ranging from C to F, but they were either terrible or horribly disappointing. Ghost in the Shell 2017, Alien Covenant, and The Snowman. I heard The Snowman wasn't finished, and they released it anyway. Good job.
I thought Alien Covenant was would have been fine if it wasn't called Alien Covenant. If it was called Prometheus 2 like it was supposed to be, then it would have been better.
Someone told, at least one person I heard from said that the movie just kind of stops working once the xenomorphs show up. I didn't see that one either.
Well, I feel like the alien part, the xenomorph part, was shoehorned in.
Yeah, like, that was the impression my friend had too.
Like, I feel like they really tried to make what would have been a decent sequel to Prometheus an alien film.
Ugh, gross.
So, you know, like, it wasn't awful. It just shouldn't have been called Alien. I saw that at the drive-in.
Let's see. I could list other films I saw this year, but this mailbag is running pretty long already. So I'll close with my intent to keep following, reading, watching, and listening, and supporting Nerd and Tie as often as I can. Till next time, stay random, friends.
Yeah,
thanks,
like,
Random.
Yeah, looks like Get Out is no longer on Netflix.
Dang it.
Well, I need to see that.
It's so good.
It's on DVD, though.
Yeah, I could probably just rent. I mean, I actually have a family video in my town.
Ooh.
And believe it or not, I like renting movies from brick and mortar video places because I like brick and mortar video places. I say knowing full well that they're not relevant anymore,
well,
but
you know,
I like.
I used to love going to the rental store and like, it's like you'd go out, like, you know, like it felt like you were doing something, especially when I was younger, like when I was in like high school and early college and when my friends and I were too broke to actually go do something, So it gave us a, you know, when we were, you know, a bunch of guys, you know, being dorks and nerds like we were, you know, driving to Hollywood Video and, you know, renting a bad B movie felt like we went out and did something, even though we just were sitting in, you know, our friend's basement watching a movie for the night, you know.
But still, it's like you can play movie roulette, you know, you don't.
Yeah.
Anything might happen.
My wife and I sort of do that with Netflix right now, but it's not the same feeling. But
it's the results in theory should be the same, but it's not.
But the fact is that like it's so much less expensive to, you know, to watch a movie every week.
I know.
And it's so much more convenient.
These are all true. I just.
Well, yeah, that's why it's like I lived not that far from a video store for 7 years. And when I was in Lafayette, that Family Video was just down the road. I never at any point walked in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get it. I gotcha.
Like there are Family Videos in Eau Claire. I've never been in any of. I've been in some of them historically, but we're talking like. You know, in 2003, it wasn't weird to go into a Family Video. You know what I mean?
Right.
All right. So that brings us to the final section of our show, and that is the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
Challenge.
All right. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is where Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. It's a challenge for your brain. Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is where during the show, at the end of the show, I read a line from a book, and the challenge to you, the listener at home, is to guess what book I am reading from. If you guess correctly, you get included in our Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, we list your name on the website. 2, we put your name, read your name aloud during the podcast every episode. 3, nothing else. This is
what more do you want?
The current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkham Zero, Rin and Senti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings, Van Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilysaurus, Paper Godzilla, Kevzy, The Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, Keith Shizuo, and Sakura Sunset. And we will continue to read the book that I was reading last episode. And I'm going to find a good sentence here by randomly flipping to a page. Up in the high fields, the wind was strong and the sun was close and strong. If you know a book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact. Click on the Formy form and tell us. Or if you have anything else you'd like to say, any dreams, hopes, slight delays in timing, thoughts on the existential crisis of splitting an episode, or if you just want to comment on anything you dream about, hope about, or about our format change that starts next episode, as we mentioned at the top of the show several days ago. literally.
Still exciting.
Still exciting. Go to nerdandtie.com/contact. Click on the form reform. Do the doodly-doo. Write the righty-right. And tell us. Or if you'd like to hear your voice on the podcast itself, you can leave a voicemail at area code 414-375-0480. And we might play your voice on the show. Wait, let me just double check to make sure that we don't have any voicemails sitting in there that I forgot about.
Oops.
Oh, it looks like we do.
Oh. Oh.
Okay.
We have voicemail. Holy cow. So this is still technically the mailbag portion. I have to take the case off my phone to play the voicemail.
Do we know who it's from? This could be really awkward.
So this person left two voicemails. We're not going to play the first one because it's a long, rambling story, which is actually really entertaining, but it's really long, and it's about drinking at conventions. But so we're going to instead just play the second because there's a time limit on calls. So,
spent the entire time just kind of babbling about drinking. I had another thing I was going to ask or talk about. It was about the YouTube partner thing. I have about 11 subscribers, so I wasn't in the partner program. So I didn't get any warning about this. And I finally got around to making proper end screen art as opposed to the stuff I've been editing. I had space to put things, and then I went to set up an end screen, and I'm like, oh, I can't do this now. Just kind of sad. Yeah. Also wondering if you had your favorite, if any of you had your favorite interactions with children at conventions, like selling or just, my last convention, there was little Elsa cosplayer who was about, I don't know, 7, 8. She was tiny. She was only like a foot above the table. And she went around to all of the vendors, and she was very seriously giving everyone these little sequin snowflakes. It was one of the cutest things I've seen in a while. Also, there were like 12 different tiny Wonder Woman, and it was really great.
Perfect.
I've been listening for a while, but love the show. Thanks. Bye. I should have just hung up now. That's what I'm gonna do.
All right, I'm sorry. I have to, like, I want to know if I can pull up the name of this person somewhere. She left her name on the first voicemail, and it is a funny, but it's a 3-minute story, so we don't have time to play a 3-minute story about drinking at conventions.
maybe at a later date.
Yes, maybe I'll save that. But person whose name I can't remember. thank you for calling in.
Thanks for leaving us an actual voice message.
Yeah.
So interactions with children at conventions.
I have an easy one.
Go for it.
It was funny for me, and it's proof that I'm not a great person. So I anyone who knows Madoka Magica knows there's a monster that shows up in the third episode called Charlotte. But in the third Madoka Magica movie, you get to meet Nagisa, aka Bebe, aka the human form of Charlotte, who, according to Madoka lore, her last wish when she got turned into a magical girl was for some cheese. Then she got her wish and turned into it and had her soul sucked out and got turned into a magical girl. So sad day in story. But anyway, so I was wandering through one convention where I saw a little girl, this tiny little girl dressed as Nagisa from the third Madoka Magica movie. And I'm like, oh, hey, my wife loves Nagisa. Could you get a picture for me? And this little girl's like, yeah. And as I took the picture, I'm like, say cheese. Because I'm a bad person.
See, my usual interaction with them is from behind my Utter's Deli table, where usually once per convention, I'll get a kid that doesn't know, like, not to touch everything. Like, they're just, like, a very tactile person, and they just, like, have to, like, touch and handle, like, all the pieces, all the things on the table. And it's just kind of weird.
Well, because we should tell people that you sell geeky pillows.
Yeah, pillows...
Pillows,
jewelry,
and
glassware, like a whole bunch,
right.
Like buttons, yeah, a whole
bunch
of different
stuff.
But
you do sell something which is really tempting to touch.
Well, yeah, the pillows, I don't care if people squish them. That's part of
right.
the selling point. But with the other stuff on my table, like, they'll touch my business cards and, like, my displays and stuff, and I'm just like, cool.
See, I've had a lot of really cute interactions with kids when I was, like, in mascot stuff. For not like a mascot costume, but like as the gardening ninja, so as a ninja, including one time where a kid cosplayed me. But like again, I think as a seller that we end up having this like other like because I also do Artist Alley, and there's always that moment where you're like hoping the kid doesn't pick up stuff because I sell books. And they are fragile things. But also, I have, like, as an artist, like, I think kids are adorable, except for when I'm behind my table. And it's not that I don't like them, but so much as I get scared, because I never know. My work isn't, like, pornographic, but so it's perfectly fine for a kid to glance at. But then some kid wants to buy my book and read it, and I'm just like, I don't know if that content is suitable for a 10-year-old. I'm like, there's like people talking about things and using language, and I really don't want someone's mom coming at me.
Yeah.
So that's always, but I like, you know, it's there are plenty of times where I've had like adorable moments with children. They're just like, most of them aren't coming to me because I'm tired. That I will say that Elsa story is freaking adorable.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
really
that's
hard
amazing.
To beat.
That's
some
like I can't beat that. But I've never had anything that adorable happen to me. At a convention. You know. My niece and nephew are adorable. All the time. Every time I see them. So, you know. I don't.
Yeah, generally I see kids and kids just get scared, you know, so.
Yeah, I just kind of stare at them and they stare back and we're just like, okay then.
So.
Yeah.
If you're cool with me, I'll be cool with you. We won't make this a big deal. Got it? Yeah,
so,
good.
So, I was prepping up stuff to end the show here, and one of the things that, one of the things you might not know at home is that to queue up audio files on the show, I use a Kindle tablet. But that means, you know, I paid the cheap price, so I have ads on my Kindle tablet. And I just went to unlock it to queue up the end music, and I got presented an ad for Shin Godzilla.
Hey. Nice. So, hey, at least it's recommending good movies to you.
I know. Oh, God, I forgot to turn the volume down before I did that. All right.
Well,
so, with that, we should wrap the show up. Next time I'll remember
so
to play
too.
Voicemails actually in the mailbag segment and not until after. Oh, crap, I forgot we have a voicemail. Starting next episode, we're changing formats. We said at the top of the show. The new format is going to be really is going to. Don't worry, we'll only be covering one or two news items at the top of the show, and then we're going to go into a big discussion topic instead of doing like trying to cover five or six things in an episode. So that's going to be fun, and we hope you guys come with us. And so we'll do news at the top. We'll have our big discussion, and then we'll continue to do our mailbag segments and the Vomit Hat Steve challenge. So the stuff that we do that no one else does, we will continue. And so we really hope you guys like the direction we're going. And as we put in the post, or I say we, as I put on the post on the website, we're trying to refocus Nerd and Tie to just be the stuff that you actually care about. So that way we know where to, so when we do new things, we're only doing stuff you like.
Darn right.
Because we like you. Because you at home are the reason why we do this. Because if you weren't listening, who would we be talking to? The answer is no
one. Space.
Yeah, space. We'd be talking to space. Why are you keeping us from talking to space? Anyways, I am, of course, Trey Dorn.
I can't be disproven as Nick Izumi.
And I hopefully will still always be Genjamin.
All right. And remember, you can follow us, Nerd and Tie, on Twitter at Nerd and Tie, on Tumblr, nerdandtie.tumblr.com, at Facebook, Facebook.com/Nerd and Tie. Technically, this might go up on the YouTube channel at youtube.com/TREGORN, and you can find Nick Izumi's video essays at youtube.com/Nick Izumi. You can find all of our personal social media contact information on nerdandtie.com if you want to follow us individually. And remember, you can support myself and Nick on Patreon, where I am patreon.com/TREGORN. Nick is patreon.com/Nick Izumi. And again, you can support on Ko-fi, and her Ko-fi account is /Genjamin. And we all hope you all have a good night, a good time. Thanks for coming with us on this wild ride, and continue with us on this wild ride, which is going somewhere. We swear to God, oh God, oh God, please hang on. Nick, say your catchphrase.
Keep on sparking in the free world.
And remember to subscribe on iTunes or on Google Play or any place RSS or Stitcher. Are you using Stitcher? Why aren't you listening to us on Stitcher if you use Stitcher? That seems weird. Everything seems weird if you think hard enough about it.
You know... Wait, is it still recording?
Yes. I was just going to let the sound the alarms
David,
play.
No.
Sound the alarm.
But it's so wild, wild. I was going to start doing the Wild Wild West rap, but...
Wiki, wiki, I wild, love wild, wild West. No, roll
wouldn't,
into the Wild
Wild
Bright
West. Have been a better movie if it would have had a Will Smith? Like, Lindsay Ellis pointed this out, but wouldn't Bright have been a better movie if it had Will Smith rapping about the plot of that?
I don't know if it would... have made it a better movie.
Woo! Ha ha! Orc Cop!